The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. Want to talk to them? Give them a call at 919-781-1973. It's now time to return to the July 2018 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This theme for the month is a summer mountain getaway. And now that we've completed the pictorial and the introduction pictures to summer in Jackson County last week, let's get on with the main article, The Spirit of High Summer. There's a picture here of three kids on a paddleboard and a fourth one trying to get on. That will probably dump them all off. There's a couple of floats here out on this lake with a beautiful mountain scene behind them. And the caption says, Rock Mountain seems to bask in the summer sun as young resort guests cool off in Hampton Lake. What a gorgeous setting this is. The Spirit of High Summer, High Hampton's mountain charm, relaxed atmosphere, and rich legacy have set the vacation standard for generations. This is written by Susan Stafford Kelly, as so many articles for Our State are. Between Bites, Will McKee Jr. speaks to nearly everyone who passes his table in the dining room at High Hampton Resort. Guests may be staying at this bark-shingled treasure of a lodge outside Cashiers for just a week or two, but they and their families, often generations of the same family, will return and return like swallows to Capistrano. And Will McKee Jr. has always been there. High Hampton is McKee's home and his family's legacy. Until his 20s, he lived in the sawmill cottage where all the inn's furniture was made. He played in the smokehouse where the inn's hams were cured. Framed pictures of him as a child, his parents and grandparents and guests at Sunday night sing-alongs, talent shows, donkey cart races line the inn's walls. He met his wife, Becky, when she had a summer job as a waitress in this wood-floored dining room with simple country chairs, white tablecloths, and mason jars filled with blossoms that flutter when a breeze wafts through the screened windows. With its evening dress code, High Hampton's dining room, where buffets feature everything from salmon to pickled okra, panna cotta to jello, may be the inn's most iconic feature, unless you count McKee himself. In 1922, McKee's grandfather, E. Lyndon McKee, bought High Hampton from the estate of Dr. William Halstead in South Carolina and opened the inn. The property was already named after Halstead's wife, a niece of Civil War General Wade Hampton III. The third-generation owner is soft-spoken with the seeming soul of a poet. He might well have written the slightly cryptic paragraph inside one brochure filled with descriptions of the inn's activities and amenities. High Hampton is not for everyone. Not everyone likes it here. Commercialism is not part of the scenery. The scenery encompasses 1,400 acres, includes golf course, tennis courts, stables, and 31 rooms in the lodge, which is on the National Register of Historic Places, plus 18 cottages arranged around a 35-acre lake beneath Chimney Top and Rock Mountains. For 95 years, guests have sought relief from the summer heat at High Hampton, but they also come for what McKee calls the spirit of Highhampton, an unfussy yet civilized appeal where an oriental rug looks right at home with a ping-pong table outside on one of the wide wraparound porches. Some 22 sofas are scattered around a lodge's lobby with its commanding four-sided fireplace built of stone. Even in July, a fire is lit every morning. Hikers can pick up boxed lunches from a sideboard, but a stack of crossword puzzles is also available, as if to say, if this is all you accomplished today, you've done enough. Skittles boards stand at the ready. Backgammon and checkerboards are permanently painted on tables. Crustless egg salad or pimento cheese sandwiches appear daily at tea time. Guests sprawl in chairs or rest their feet on the porch's rock walls, pursuing solitary enterprises with a sketch pad or a book, or, yes, a computer. Westy yips from his leash for Highhampton's welcomes dogs. The spirit of Highhampton, a rustic, unrushed bliss, is evident even in the resort's place names, pared down to basics, the boathouse, the market, where you can grab an energy bar, a bottle of water, a sandwich, the pavilion, for bridge games and bashes with bands, the lawn, with Adirondack chairs, has been the site of many a wedding, and on Thursdays hosts a dozen llamas with coats like French poodles, enchanting youngsters and adults alike. And every evening at dusk, when the gray granite face of Rock Mountain blushes rose in the sinking sun, the lawn is peopled with couples drifting toward the tavern, where a piano player tinkles out fascinating rhythm. McKee waves at a guest and then says of her, she's a member of Augusta National, but would rather be here. Here, where she can hit a golf ball toward a buoy line square on the lake for a $50 hole in water challenge on Friday nights. Here, where folks paddle the lake in canoes or on stand-up paddleboards, and toddlers splash in a baby pool delineated by cinder blocks. McKee is so assured of the enduring essence of Highhampton that in July of 2017, he passed the torch to Daniel Communities, a nationally known developer and manager of premier destination resort communities. McKee is ready to pursue other areas of enrichment, to give back in ways that the full-time job of running an inn hasn't permitted. He's pleased and confident about the segue from family to corporate proprietorship, and despite his serene mien, he is a realist. The dinnertime dress code, for example, and the sign proclaiming no denim, no ball caps, no cell phones. As if on cue, a six-year-old in a sweet summery dress playing tag with her blazer-clad dad before supper sings out, missed me, now you gotta kiss me. McKee admits that he's been struggling with the dress code concept for years, realizing that it's an homage to my father. A coat and tie made my father's generation comfortable, but I myself don't want to wear a coat and tie when I go to a restaurant. McKee understands that. In many ways, Highhampton represents the last of the Mohicans. But he says things are held on to here. The new owners embrace. That includes the resident donkeys, Ed and Fred, whom children feed with apples provided at the kitchen, as well as dinner in the dahlias, an outdoor annual fete held among hundreds of dahlias. There will be a continuum of what has been invaluable, he says, including the spectacular view of Chimney Top and Rock Mountains, which, after his father's death in 2004, McKee protected for future generations with conservation easements. Tommy Garcia, the new general manager of Highhampton Resort, as it's now known, agrees. He's not worried about the addition of televisions and telephones in guest rooms. A TV doesn't create a memory, he says. What will create a memory is what we're putting together, like a wine walk-around with a horticulturist to explain the significance of the property's magnificent champion trees, outdoor music events before dinner, a sweet tea and firefly night, complete with mason jars, when grandparents can watch their grandchildren do what they themselves once did at twilight, fire pits where families gather to tell stories about their day. The new High Hampton wants to create more experiential elements while keeping old favorites. We understand traditions and making new ones, Garcia says. High Hampton is a jewel, he continues, a jewel that Will McKee has entrusted to new faces with hopes that its legacy and traditions will live on. High Hampton Resort is at 1525 North Carolina Highway 107 in South, or 107 South, in Cashiers, North Carolina. That's way down there in the left, before you get to Cherokee. And the website is highhamptonresort.com. They have a toll-free number, 800-334-2551. And let me remind you that you are listening to Our State Magazine on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And if you have any comments on our program, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. And that, of course, goes for any of the programming that you hear or would like to hear on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Continuing our summer in Jackson County, Reading a River. Some 4,600 miles of trout-rich waters weave through Jackson County. All those rainbows, brookies, and browns are easy to find, but hard to catch, unless you have legendary fly fishing guides Roger Lowe and Henry Williamson by your side. And here they are, the good buddies, standing in what looks like classic trout fishermen gear, with their they've got boots on, or I guess those are boots that are stuck into waders. I don't know whether they're part of the waders or not. And then, of course, they have all these pockets in the vests and, of course, hats and a little bag on the side. What do you call that? A keel bag? I forget. And fishing rods. And on the left side, there's a close-up of a little kit that they carry that has dozens and dozens of flies to put on the end of their lines. Roger Lowe's dropped a handful of flies in my palm like seeds. I was in college at the time, studying literature at Western Carolina University, but I spent a good deal of my time fishing and lolling with paperbacks by the Tuskegee River. A buddy and I had driven from Cullowhee to Waynesville for a new pair of wading boots from Lowe's Fly Shop, a utilitarian bare-bones operation free of high-dollar frills of most outfitters nowadays. Anyone who knew anything about fly fishing in western North Carolina knew that the store's owner, Roger Lowe, was a legend. We found him sitting against the back wall, a desk lamp silhouetting him in front of the vise as he turned out flies at an unfathomable rate. My buddy peered over Roger's shoulder and said, "That's the caddis hatch that's coming off the Tuskegee, isn't it?" Roger nodded. It was a simple pattern, as all brilliant flies tend to be. A number 4 dry fly hook with a yellow dubbing egg sac tied at the back of the shank, a black thread body, 3 stacked slate gray feathers of cul de canard for wings, and 2 turns of blue dun hackle at the head. When he whip finished the fly he was tying, Roger took my hand and dropped 10 or 12 flies into my cupped palm. "Here," he said, "go fish these." And we did. That evening, my friend and I worked our way from Webster Bridge on the Tuskegee to an elbow bend a few hundred yards downstream. The water slowed and deepened into a wide pool that bellied away from the steep kudzu bank. As the sun dropped, the show began. Clouds of gray caddis hovered over the river like a low fog. Soon the water was boiling with fish, dough-bellied stuckers slapping the surface as if someone had thrown a fistful of feed into the water where the trout were hatched. We fished the flies Roger had given us on a tandem rig, one fly tied to a 14-inch length of tippet strung from the hook bend of the other. Casting cross-stream, we rode them out on the swing, allowing the flies to sweep taut down the river, then working them back in short strips. We caught trout until it was too dark to see, maybe 100 fish between us over the course of a few hours. We walked to the truck with our fingertips wrinkled from water, our clothes reeking of the fish we'd caught, our smiles as wide as the future. That was 16 or so years ago now, and I hadn't seen or spoken to Roger in all that time, except for a chance glance whenever I happened to be driving past as he guided clients down the river. But last winter I drove to the fly shop at the south end of Jackson County to visit him and another fly fisherman, Henry Williamson. I wanted them to tell me a story. The truth is, Henry's a man of equal legend, and though I'd never met him, I'd been hearing the stories for years. I was told that Henry was gruff and wiry with a wry sense of humor, and that he cussed like a sailor, but that he could cast a fly rod as well as any man who'd ever picked up a stick. What I wanted to know, though, was how two of the greatest fly fishermen to ever wade the rivers I love wound up working under one roof. Now in their early 60s, both men guide for Brookings Anglers in Cashiers. On the surface, the two couldn't be any more different. Roger carries an almost meditative air about him, while Henry has refused to sand down his rough edges. They're a sort of Mutt and Jeff pair who somehow wound up in the same place, drawn together by a single thing that neither man could escape. Henry, 63, grew up an hour south of the North Carolina state line in Anderson County, South Carolina. His love of fly fishing started with a great uncle who got him on the water when he was 12 years old. Lake Hartwell used to have a tail water below it, and I had a great uncle, my Uncle Peanut, Uncle Ernest. He was so old he fought in the trenches of France, and he fly fished, Henry said. He got me started, and I never quit. I just never let up. We'd come here to the North Carolina mountains. We'd fish the East Fork of the Chattanooga and the Chattanooga. After I got a driver's license, I just kept coming. For Roger, 62, fly fishing was also in his blood. He was born in the heart of Carolina trout country to a fam of outdoorsmen who have called Haywood County home for generations. Just being raised right here, my family camped and fished religiously. The Okanalufti, Smokemont, Bradley Fork, Cataloochee, Big Creek, that's what we did for fun, Roger says. We farmed and worked, and if we had any spare moments, that was our reward, being able to go for a day on a park stream, preferably. There were lots of us that loved camp and just be outdoors. In the decades before the film version of A River Runs Through It came out in 1992, there were few people turning a love for the outdoors, and more specifically fly fishing, into careers. Nevertheless, Henry and Roger quit good jobs to take a chance on the water, leaving a career in the forestry department of Clemson University for one of them, the other walking away from a 15-year job at about the same time. If I've been doing this 34 years, I want to say I met Roger 32 or 33 years ago, Henry says. I walked into the One Feather Fly shop in Cherokee, and Roger was sitting there tying those foam green weenies, and we started talking. At the time, the number of guides working west of the Platte Balsams was half a dozen or fewer. It was an era of fiberglass rods and a few hundred fly patterns. Henry and Roger each became a master of something uniquely his own. With enough time, anyone can learn to cast a fly, but Henry is one of the few for whom that rhythm is as natural as a heartbeat. Hand him in a rod, and he will write cursive across the sky. Just as I saw that day in his shop, Roger shines behind the vise. He's arguably the greatest fly tire to ever come out of Western North Carolina. Like a storyteller holding onto a place of history, he keeps patterns like the coffee stone, a stone fly known locally around Haywood County as the Daco Nymph, from disappearing. Though their boot prints often overlap the same logging roads, Roger and Henry led separate careers. Henry worked for a variety of outfitters, including the likes of Ted Turner and Jimmy Carter. Roger opened Lowe's Fly Shop, which he ran for 15 years while he raised a family. But on a cold winter day up the Nantahala 5 years ago, everything came together. The fishermen who crowd the streams from spring to fall had all gone home, leaving the river to guides and locals. No one was on the water. Roger had even hung it up, finally writing off the day as too cold to fish. He was driving along and spotted someone on the side of the road, tying a fly. It was Henry, fishing alone. I parked on a ways up and walked back, and I put my arm around Henry, and there was no way he could see me. I mean, I've got a death grip on him, and I said, "You know what? This is a good spot for a man like you to get his ass whooped," Roger remembers. And Henry said, "Damn you, Roger, what are you doing here?" The two shared a laugh by the river and stayed in touch. By then, Lowe's Fly Shop had come and gone. Roger had taken a break from the water, but he was back to guiding and always looking for more clients. Henry had been running trips for a fly shop out of Cashiers, and they were keeping him swamped. So, on Henry's advice, Roger got in touch with one of the partners of Brookings Anglers, Matt Cantor, and not long after, the old boys were off and running. I was just blown away that Roger Lowe would ever call me looking for work, Cantor says. I immediately jumped on it. I knew right away how fortunate I was to have two guys like that on my team, and that drove me to hit extra hard to make sure they stayed busy and kept customers so they could do what they're good at. As for what they're good at, the truth is that it's less about their own abilities in the water and more about the knack for sharing their talents and passions with others. I guess a lot of people get uncomfortable in a trout stream if they've never done it, Roger says. I feel like I can take anybody and make them feel comfortable and make it enjoyable for them and try to find the positive in it that they're trying to accomplish. I know where the fish are. I can't always make them bite, but I know where they are. For Henry, it's as much about the experience as the fish. It's about teaching someone how to identify a cardinal plant and a blue-winged olive mayfly. It's about showing them the difference between native southern Appalachian brook trout versus stocked fish that was raised in a hatchery. I think for most of our customers, a day out is really important, Henry explains. The little bit of money we charge for guiding doesn't mean crap to these people. Their day away from the office and away from the cursed city is what's important to them. Of course, he would also like folks he takes out on the water to end up with a trout on their line. I have this overwhelming desire for them to catch fish, he says, but it's also for them to enjoy it, to enjoy an outdoor day, and to learn something. As Henry and Roger have all known all their lives, it's not hard to, it's hard not to enjoy a day spent standing in a stream, the current wrapping around your body like a breath around a weed, the music of the river seeming to stop time. It has never been difficult to fall in love with this place. Nowadays, when the air warms, the winter lull of blue-winged olive and blue-quill mayflies give way to bigger bugs, hatches of Hendricksons, Cahills, and Sulphurs, the fishermen arrive and stay until the mountains burn golden with autumn. Any given day in my home water, the Tuckasegee River, dozens of outfitters weave drift boats through scores of waiting fishermen along a five-mile stretch of delayed harvest. The holes I've fished for most of my life are more crowded than they used to be, and whether that is good or bad is a matter of opinion. I drive farther and go deeper into the woods to be alone. Much like Henry and Roger, I've always been drawn to water. I trace blue lines on topo maps and find places far enough from the pavement that most people wouldn't be willing to hike. Tiny trickles of creek where, when I'm lucky, I can tempt the native brook trout to rise. I crawl over moss-covered stones to shoot bow and arrow casts beneath low boughs of laurel. There's no one around, no one to see my fly catching the leaves or me spending an hour untangling knots. But I can sense that someone has fished this place before. As I eat my lunch by the water, I imagine Roger having rested right there 30 years back. When I'm ready to make my cast, I check the trees behind me, and I get the feeling that Henry has probably surveyed those same branches trying to clear his back cast, though he'll probably succeed where I will fail. There's something to be said for a life spent in pursuit of a single thing, for a heart that has only ever known the river. Fishermen are like that, a rare breed, having chosen a hard-headed track that most will never brave. There's the cast, the mend, and the drift. There's the fly, the trout, and the rise. In the end, that's not a bad set of footsteps to follow. That's written by David Joy, the author of the Edgar-nominated novel Where All the Light Tends to Go, as well as the novels The Weight of This World and The Line That Held Us. Brooking Anglers can be reached at 49 Pillar Drive in Cashiers. Want to talk to them by phone, 828-743-3768. And, of course, online at brookingsonline.com. As we wind down here, there's some advertising on this page. We've got Art and Soul of the Yadkin Valley, Surrey County Wine Trail. Visit 15 wineries in the heart of North Carolina's Yadkin Valley. Request a free guide at yadkinvalleync.com. And there's all sorts of events that they list for 2018, Mount Airy, Elkin, Dobson, Pilot Mountain, and Surrey County. Then we've got Ryan's Restaurants featuring steaks, chops, and seafood. Escape to our place in the woods. They're at 719 Coliseum Drive in Winston-Salem. Let's see. Not clear if they have a website, but they'd be happy to talk to you. They had an award of excellence from Wine Spectator in 2017. And on the back, inside the back cover, there's a full-page ad for Grandfather Mountain, where wonders never cease. Pretty young lady here, holding out a finger, and a monarch butterfly has landed. And beside it, it says human nature. There's brackets around them to indicate that they have joined. Seems like we're all drawn to nature, and whether it's childlike wonder or an adult sense of discovery, you'll find it here in abundance. www.grandfather.com. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Sure hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be back to listen again next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.